Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
There are stories that live at the edge of what the mind can stand to remember. Stories that follow you from country to country, that linger even when you think you've outgrown the dark. For one man, the haunting began in Spain sometime around his 15th year. His name isn't important. What matters is the pattern that found him again and again across decades. The thing that watched him sleep. The thing that wanted to take him out of himself. And he would later call them the shadows. Not all were the same. Some radiated malice, others something almost like curiosity. And once in a great while, a few seemed, if not good, then at least benevolent. But the first one came with teeth. When his parents decided to move from England to Spain, they sent him ahead to live with his aunt, a woman who worshipped her spoiled son and had little patience for anyone else. He was 15, miserable and lonely in a small whitewashed house that smelled of dust and resentment. His cousin bullied him relentlessly. His aunt accused him of stealing money he hadn't even known existed. The sun beat down like punishment, and every night the house echoed with the brittle silence of people who'd stopped liking each other long ago. That's when it came. One night he lay awake in bed, the room thick with heat and insects humming in the window screen. His mind wandered, as minds do when sleep won't come, until suddenly it felt as though someone had flipped a switch inside his skull. His body locked. His breathing slowed, conscious but unable to move. It wasn't the first time he'd heard of sleep paralysis, but this was different. He didn't feel trapped in his body. He felt pushed out of it. In that suspended space, he saw it, a hand, huge and black, ending in claws that hovered inches above his face. He tried to scream, but no sound came. The hand opened wider as though reaching down to seize his head. Then he fought! Every nerve fired at once as he forced his body to obey. With superhuman effort, he broke free, rolling over, slamming the switch on the wall again and again. Nothing. The bulb refused to light, and then the room changed. From the corner near the open window, something moved, a shape darker than the dark itself. It poured across the floor like ink in water. A voice, low and resonant, spoke three words. The twins. He didn't know what it meant. He only knew the sound of it froze his heart. An icy cold radiated from the floor, rising through the mattress into his bones. The shadow twisted upward, elongating until it vanished into the ceiling, leaving behind an emptiness so sharp it almost rang. Then the light flicked on. He sat there, drenched in sweat, staring at the spot where the thing had been. Over the next 6 months, it stalked him. Siesta hours in southern Spain have a peculiar stillness. Streets empty, air vibrating with heat. On those endless afternoons, he'd walk home from school alone, the road shimmering ahead of him. And always, that feeling would start, the unmistakable sensation of being watched. Every few steps, he'd glance back. Nothing. Just sunlight and the white walls of shuttered houses. But the feeling returned stronger each time, a presence just out of sight, pacing him step for step. Sometimes he'd catch a flicker of movement at the edge of his vision, something slipping behind a wall, melting into a doorway. But when he turned, there was only air. Then the attacks began. They came without warning, invisible but brutal. It would start as pressure, first between the eyes, then at the temples. Like invisible hands pressing inward, his whole body would tingle, vibrate, as if electrified. Then the dizziness would hit, his vision tunneling to black. He described it later as feeling his soul being tugged from his body, something pulling upward against every instinct that screamed stay. Then came the pain, a crushing weight in his chest as though an unseen fist had wrapped around his heart and squeezed, a stabbing cold like a knife of ice between his ribs. He'd gasp for air, body rigid, certain he was dying. But he was 15, healthy, athletic, no reason for a failing heart. The doctors would have called it panic, but he knew panic didn't come with an audience you couldn't see. The worst episode happened not in bed, but at school. He was standing in a hallway during recess when the world seemed to tilt. A rush of invisible wind hit him square in the chest. That familiar blade of ice slid between his ribs, and he crumpled. His friend later told him he'd gone white as chalk, eyes rolled back like a corpse. Then, just as suddenly, it stopped. No mark, no pain, only a terrible certainty that something had just tried and failed to take him. After his parents arrived in Spain and moved him out of his aunt's house, the attacks ceased. Happiness, it seemed, was armor. Whatever fed on despair had lost its grip. For nearly a decade, the shadows left him alone. 10 years later, London. He was 25, maybe 26, and everything that could unravel in a life had done so. A string of failed relationships, the kind that left more scar tissue than memory. An injury that shattered his marathon dreams and landed him on crutches for half a year. Isolation does strange things to the mind. It shrinks the world down to the size of your pain. And when you live inside pain long enough, the dark starts to notice. That's when they came back. At first, it was subtle. He'd lie awake, staring at the ceiling, when the air would change, thick, electric, charged with something unseen. The paralysis followed, the same awful stillness from his teenage years, and he couldn't move, couldn't shout, only watch as the edges of reality seemed to blur. But this time, the shadows had learned new tricks. Instead of claws or crushing pain, they sent visions, images so vile he couldn't speak of them for years. He saw things no living person should ever see. Children screaming, bodies bound, acts of cruelty that turned his stomach and seared his brain. He wasn't in the scenes, not exactly. He was a witness, a ghost trapped inside the vision, forced to watch. It was as if something wanted to infect him with despair. He fought the only way he could, by sheer force of will. If he could make a single sound, a grunt, a syllable, the paralysis would break and the horror would end. Each time he woke trembling, gasping, praying for morning, he went to doctors. He was scanned, tested, prodded for signs of epilepsy, narcolepsy, mental illness. Every test came back clear. "You need rest," they told him. "You're under stress." They had no idea. The shadows escalated. Now, in addition to the visions, they sent threats, images of his own mutilation, his own death, glimpses of a future they wanted him to believe was waiting. And always, after each episode, he'd catch sight of them. Figures robed and cowled, sliding through mirrors, bending light at the corners of rooms. At night, he'd see them move past the window, no sound, no outline, just the darkness itself shifting shape. He began to feel hunted again, just as he had in Spain. Only this time, they didn't need to hide in the shadows. They were the shadows. He began to live in a state of constant dread. Sleep was no longer a refuge, but a battlefield. Every time he closed his eyes, he risked being dragged back into that place. The liminal space between dream and consciousness where the shadows waited. He stopped trusting the dark. He left lights on in every room, even the bathroom. The hum of electricity became a comfort, a ward against whatever slipped through when the world went quiet. But exhaustion is its own kind of haunting, and eventually, even light couldn't keep the night out. He tried to reason it away. Stress, trauma, overwork. But the body knows when something's wrong beyond the reach of language. When the veil between worlds has thinned enough to let things crawl through. And the veil around him? It wasn't just thin. It was open. The visions returned, each more violent than the last. They weren't nightmares. Nightmares fade with dawn. These were lucid, waking horrors. Scenes of cruelty so specific, so detailed, he could smell the blood and smoke. They'd start the same way. Paralysis, a creeping pressure building between his eyes until it bloomed into a ringing in his skull. Then the images would flood in. He described one to his doctor once, a child locked in a cellar crying for a mother who would never come. The doctor blinked, nodded, scribbled something, and asked if he'd considered medication. He never went back. The shadows didn't just want to frighten him anymore. They wanted to wear him down, to make him question reality itself. But fear, like pain, has limits. When you reach the edge of it, something inside you changes. It's not courage, not exactly. It's fatigue, the kind that turns terror into anger. That's what happened one night when he finally decided to face them. He'd noticed something. The shadows seemed to favor mirrors. They'd appear there first, subtle at the edges, a ripple behind his reflection, a blur that didn't move when he did. So he decided to turn that weakness into a trap. One evening, just after sunset, he sat on the floor of his bedroom facing the tall mirror opposite his bed. The light in the room was soft, twilight blue, enough to see shapes, but not faces. He slowed his breathing, unfocused his eyes until his reflection began to fade. And then quietly, but firmly, he spoke. "I am not afraid of you anymore." The air shifted, heavy and electric. He saw movement in the glass, a shadow-gathering shape, cloaked and indistinct, a hooded figure that seemed both near and impossibly far. "I know what you are," he said, though he didn't, not really. "You can't hurt me. You can only scare me, and I'm done being scared." The figure twitched, its edges blurring like smoke and wind. "You have no power over me unless I give it to you," he continued, "and I'm not giving it anymore." The temperature dropped, breath visible in the air. Then, as suddenly as it had come, the presence dissolved. The mirror cleared. The room was just a room again. He sat there for a long time, waiting for the air to shift again, for the sound, the pressure, the whisper. But there was nothing. The shadows were gone. For the first time in years, he slept without interruption, no paralysis, no visions, just silence. Days turned to weeks, weeks to months, seasons changed. He began to believe it was over. Years passed. He married, moved across the sea to Ireland, started over. The shadows became something half remembered, a dark story told to no one. He built a new life, brick by brick, the kind of quiet happiness that doesn't draw attention from whatever listens on the other side. And for a long time, the dark stayed empty. Until one winter night, 15 years after Spain, 10 years after London, it came again. He and his wife were lying in bed, the house wrapped in that soft stillness that comes just before sleep. The wind pressed against the windows, steady and calm. Then his wife gripped his arm. "Did you hear that?" she whispered. He blinked, half drowsy. "Hear what?" "On the stairs," she said. Her voice had that tremor of someone caught between logic and panic. "Something's moving." He pushed himself up, listening. Nothing. "I heard rattling," she insisted. Like a gourd or a snake, that kind of sound, and footsteps. Slow, coming up the stairs. He sat up fully now, pulse quickening. "It's probably the wind," he said automatically, even as a part of him, and the part that still remembered Spain. Knew it wasn't. Then the air changed. A cold seeped under the door, not the drafty chill of winter, but something deeper, a cold that carried intent. His skin prickled. Huh? He didn't hear anything at first. He felt it, a presence, familiar. There's a kind of cold that has weight, the kind that presses down, that feels like it's looking through you. He'd felt it before, 15 years earlier, in that stifling Spanish bedroom. Only this time, the feeling wasn't hateful. It wasn't trying to crush him. It was curious. He could sense it outside the door, standing at the top of the stairs, watching. His wife's hand tightened around his wrist. She whispered, "It's right there." He could see it now, not with his eyes, but in his mind's eye, a hooded figure made of shadow, blurred and shifting, like smoke forming the rough shape of a person. The presence felt cold, yes, but not cruel, alien, inhuman, but not evil. It stayed there for several minutes, motionless, as if studying them through the wood. Then, slowly, it began to fade. He felt it draw back, the pressure easing, the air warmed again. He and his wife turned toward the window just in time to see something, a shadow darker than the night, pass across it. For a moment, the lights from the neighbor's house disappeared behind that moving shape as if something solid had crossed between. Then it was gone. He lay awake for hours afterward, waiting for the fear to come, but it didn't. What he felt instead was wonder. Because whatever had visited them that night, it wasn't like the others. It hadn't come to torment or possess. It had come simply to see. He couldn't explain how he knew, but he was certain of it. The presence that had once stalked him, tried to crush him, paralyzed him, now only looked on with something like fascination. Maybe it had changed. Maybe he had. Maybe those things existed on some parallel layer of reality, just out of phase with our own, brushing against us when the conditions are right, pulled closer by emotion, by weakness, by wonder. Maybe fear had been the doorway all along. He didn't tell anyone about that night for months. When he finally did, it was only because his wife brought it up first. She said she'd seen it too. The shadow moving past the window, the brief blackout of the neighbor's lights. She described the same rattling sound, the same chill, the same strange feeling of being observed. It was the first time he realized he hadn't imagined it, and it was the first time he didn't feel completely alone with his haunting. But the visit left him with more questions than answers. Why had it come? Why, after all these years of silence, was it the same entity that had tormented him in Spain, the same one that sent him visions in London? Or were they different beings entirely? Predators and wanderers sharing the same void between worlds? He couldn't decide which idea was worse. So all he knew for certain was this. The thing on the stairs hadn't come to harm him. It had come to look at him, to acknowledge him. And in that acknowledgement, he felt something close to peace. For days after that night in Ireland, the air in the house felt charged. Not haunted, exactly, but alive in a way that made the ordinary world seem thinner, less certain. Every creak of the floorboards, every flicker of the lamp seemed to hum with residual energy. He could feel it in his bones. The faint static left behind when something from somewhere else had passed through. He didn't speak of it at first, neither did his wife. They both walked quietly around the subject, as if naming it would somehow invite it back, but the silence between them wasn't fearful. It was reverent. When he finally broke that silence, it wasn't to ask what it was, but why now? Why, after all the pain, all the terror, all the years of being hunted and drained, would this final encounter feel almost kind? The more he thought about it, the more he began to suspect that maybe these beings were never purely good or evil to begin with. Maybe what he'd felt as malevolence when he was young, when he was terrified, powerless, and angry, had been something else entirely. Maybe it was curiosity mistaken for cruelty, or maybe, as with humans, the shadows had their own spectrum, predators, wanderers, watchers. But maybe, just maybe, so some of them changed. He thought often of the first one, the hand, the clawed fingers reaching for his face, that voice whispering, "The twins." At 15, it had felt like a demon. Now, decades later, he wondered if it had simply been the first thing that found him open, vulnerable, half asleep in a place drenched with his fear. Fear was a beacon, after all. It called to things. And he'd been practically screaming. The stalking, the pressure, the attacks, all of it had come when he was at his weakest, a lonely boy in Spain, an injured man in London, each time stripped of stability and identity. It was like his misery had thinned the walls between worlds. But the night in Ireland was different. He wasn't broken anymore. He wasn't desperate. He was loved, rooted, grounded in something the shadows could never imitate. So when the presence came up those stairs, it hadn't come to conquer. It had come to observe. It wasn't hungry anymore. It was curious. Over the following weeks, he began to pay closer attention to the boundaries of reality. The edges where shadow met light. He noticed things he'd never seen before. The way darkness in a room seems to have depth, like layers of unseen air. The way mirrors sometimes flicker, not from reflection, but from movement just behind it. It wasn't that he was trying to summon anything. It was more like he was learning to listen again, to see with the part of himself that had gone numb after years of trying not to believe. Sometimes he'd sit at the window just before dawn, watching the last of the night drain out of the sky, and he'd feel that same sensation he'd felt when he stared into the mirror all those years ago. That gentle hum just beneath perception. It was like knowing someone was watching, but not out of malice. More like being studied by a scientist observing a rare creature. That realization didn't comfort him exactly, but it gave him context. He began to wonder if humanity had misunderstood these things completely. Maybe the shadows weren't ghosts or demons or lost souls at all. Maybe they were something older, a form of life that shared the same space we did, but at a slightly different frequency, like two radio stations overlapping, sometimes catching each other's songs for just a few notes before drifting apart. And when those frequencies crossed, both sides looked at each other and thought, "What are you?" That idea changed how he remembered everything. The attacks in Spain and London, the chest pain, the paralysis, the ice, the visions. Maybe those hadn't been assaults at all. Maybe they'd been collisions. Two existences brushing against each other in a way neither could fully survive. Like electricity arcing when two wires touch that shouldn't. It would explain the pain, the dizziness, the sense of being pulled out of himself. If his consciousness was brushing against something beyond its dimension, it would feel like tearing. And as for the visions, those grotesque, violent images of cruelty and death, maybe they hadn't come from the shadows at all. Maybe they'd come from him. If these beings could access consciousness, maybe they reflected what was already inside, his own fears, his guilt, his disgust at the world. A mirror not of light, but of emotion. That possibility unsettled him more than demons ever could. Because if that were true, it meant the worst monsters he'd seen had come from himself. He didn't tell anyone this theory. It felt too strange, too unprovable. But he carried it like a secret philosophy. When people online talked about shadow people as purely evil, as omens of death, he stayed quiet. He understood why they thought that the cold, the paralysis, the sense of being watched were all real enough to terrify anyone. But he also knew there was something deeper at play. Maybe he thought these beings were not invaders, but witnesses. Maybe they drifted closer when we were on the edge of collapse, not to harm us, but to see what we were. Creatures caught between body and soul, between physical and spiritual, radiating all that wild, contradictory energy. To them, maybe we were the strange ones. There were nights he still felt that old, familiar pressure at the edges of sleep. Not enough to freeze him, just enough to remind him of what once was. He would lie there quietly, breathing slow, acknowledging the weight in the air. "I know you're there," he'd whisper into the dark. "You can stay, but you can't have me." And every time the weight would ease, the air would lighten. No visions, no pain, no whispers. Just peace. He began to think that maybe, in some unspoken way, they respected boundaries too. Years later, while traveling for work, he stayed in a small hotel on the edge of a Spanish coastal town, not far from where the first encounter had happened all those years before. The room was plain, white walls, tiled floor, the faint smell of salt from the sea. On the second night, as he drifted towards sleep, he heard it again. That faint rattling sound, like a gourd, a spirit rattle, something shaking dry seeds. He froze. His heart pounded. But this time he didn't panic. He opened his eyes and simply said softly, "Hello." The air shimmered, and for a fraction of a second he saw movement in the corner. A ripple, like heat rising off asphalt. Then a shape, tall, thin, hooded, began to coalesce near the door. It didn't move closer. It just stood there, a silhouette against the dim light leaking through the curtain. He watched it. It watched him. Then, with the faintest shift, the shape seemed to nod. A slow, deliberate acknowledgement. And then it was gone. He lay there afterward, heart still racing, but strangely calm. The fear that had once defined him had finally given way to something else. Understanding. Whatever these things were, they were aware. Not human, not divine, not even moral by any standard he could define, just aware. And for the first time in his life, that realization didn't frighten him. It humbled him. In the years that followed, he told his story to a few close friends, though never in full. Most people dismissed it as sleep paralysis, hypnagogic hallucination, or trauma manifesting in sensory form. He let them believe that. But sometimes, late at night, when the world is quiet and the dark grows thick enough to press against the skin, he still feels it. That slight change in pressure, that static hum that says the veil is thin again. He doesn't fear it anymore. He knows what it means. It's not a threat. It's not a warning. It's simply a reminder that something else exists alongside us, unseen but not indifferent, drawn to the flicker of consciousness like moths to flame. And maybe, when the light goes out, that's where we all go. Not heaven, not hell, just the place in between.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.